Welcome to the podcast, Entrepreneur Perspectives, building and protecting your business one podcast at a time, a CadSource production. In this episode, I chat with Joshua Greco, business and career coach at Pro Advisor Coach. This episode exists because of CadSource. CadSource is your content team. You know how many business leaders need help communicating their story? That's what we do. Content strategy, creation, and distribution for business leaders. This provides opportunities, relationships, and a platform for you and your business. Why do we do this? Because at CadSource, we exist to help you create and share amazing content. And yes, you should have a podcast. We'll help you. Learn more by visiting kezcontent.com. Josh is a fellow Buffalonian and quite a thinker. We hit on topics like the power of habit, the psychology of a sports fan and entrepreneur, relationships, and being open to change. As Josh says, on your journey to achievement, bring the right people with you. So let's bring in that right person right now, Joshua Greco. A while ago, you know, us both being from Buffalo, I'd written this article and it was probably like my own self-therapy of thinking about being a Bills fan is like blind faith is bad. And it's so weird because during these years when the Bills were just inept, it seemed like I always got caught up in, no, this is the year. This is going to happen. Like, I got faith in this team. I like this coach and I like these players. And oh yeah, they drafted Willis McGahee or whatever those things happen. I bought into it. And then now I'm a little bit more pessimistic on some things, but I wrote this article and it was like, blind faith is bad for business. Take it from a Buffalo Bills fan. And talking to someone like yourself, who's a coach, who's helping people out, I would imagine you'd think the same way, maybe not about the Bills, but if you just jump into something, and yes, you have to have faith, you have to have a belief, but blind faith, blind belief, it could get you in a lot of trouble because you could go so many years down the path and it's like, you had no guiding thesis, no principle, maybe no leadership, no coaching, no someone else out there to support you. I want to talk a little bit about that. It just, when I knew I was going to be talking to you this morning, I thought about that article and I just wanted to bring it back up and talk about blind faith.
Yeah, it's kind of important to separate these two topics and then we can bring them back together. But like, I've thought a lot about this, about being a fan and putting so much stock in my happiness with things that are out of my control. And that's what it comes down to for me, like control what you can't control. And then the stuff that you can't, that's where the faith comes in. And I think that's necessary to being a fan is like, if you're not going to enjoy and think that your team's going to win the Super Bowl, then what's the point? That's what made the years about the Sabres tanking so hard was like, man, we're trying to lose. Like, what is this about? But yeah, so to your point, I think there is a need for a certain level of faith, but it's about taking the actions that are within your control that make me, I keep sports at more of an arm length when I'm watching them and enjoying them. And I'm not putting so much stock in the end result to my happiness as it relates to my happiness.
Yeah. No, I think that's important. And it's funny because there's this conversation going on Twitter and I hear it a lot and we've talked about it a lot. And sports is interesting because there's a sense of belonging that you get. So this is kind of going back more on the sports side of things and away from the business, but it applies in so many ways because there is this belief, but there's this belonging that you have. And I think there's a lot of good and there's a lot of bad in it. And you touched on the bad in the sense that if you took it too far, if you let the outcome of the game or the outcome of what people think about your team or whatever that is, dictate your happiness, that's a problem. You can no doubt get caught up in the emotion and the energy and the rawness of it. And that's a lot of fun. But what happens is it leads to tribalism. And you obviously see that in politics. You see it in, I mean, just in so many different walks of life. And obviously NFL football is a big one. College football is serious, right? Especially in regions of the country. I mentioned this recently, like if you talk to someone from Ohio versus someone from Alabama, they're living in two opposite worlds. In Alabama, like this is the only football that's played. It's only played in the Southeast. Anyone outside of this isn't playing real football and vice versa. And again, those are the extremes, but we're dealing with that. And then you get into the psychology of it. And this has been proven that you've talked to a fan after a game's played. They'll say it, we won, they lost. So they disassociate themselves with the loss. They'll associate themselves with the win because there's this belonging and it makes you feel good. And again, that's not always bad. Like enjoy it, have fun with it. It's just, to different extremes, but kind of like you said, bringing it back together, there is this, I feel like you have to have faith and sometimes you can't really see like where things are going, but it brings in the people that are around you. And you talk about relationships a lot. The people around you, like a lot of people might not think you're on the right track, but I have always said, if you have enough people and the people that you deep down trust, you might have something going. and lean into it, keep leaning into it and rely on those people. And I talked to someone like you, Josh, and that's why you exist. Not why, the only reason, right? But as a coach, I should say, to help those people understand it, hold them accountable, talk about this thing, because you have to surround yourself with the right people. And you talk about this all the time. Bring the right people with you, I think you said, and it's all about relationships. And when did you come to this realization of like, has this always been like a guiding principle for you?
It's a good question. To me, I think, let me try to answer my viewpoints of it, because then maybe that'll bring me to when I realized it, because it's this dance between the internal and the external. And if we're measuring ourselves by the other people around us and the feedback that we're getting, it's not a winnable game. But we exist around other people, so we have to have that element. So I believe it has to come from an inner directed source of what you believe in or what you stand for. And then it comes to surrounding yourself in an environment with other people who are going to lift you up or push you to be more than what you are. And I think that's inherent in any growth. And part of that is uncomfortable, because that means shedding some relationships and some old friendships who, you know, maybe are not serving you to do that. And that's a very difficult thing for people to do. And some people never get to that point where they're okay with that. But I think that's very important to ourselves. If we're really in touch with our inner being and who we are, that self-reflection is necessary. And that's the internal. And then surrounding yourselves with the right people is that external.
It's very difficult to do. And there is this in-between that you talked about. And those in-betweens exist in many places. I keep hearing this, and I talked about it again recently on a podcast, but I'm not like a comic book fan, but I hear the analogy of like, I don't know if it's an analogy even, but the comic book strip, and you have one frame here and then the next frame. In between the frames is where a lot's happening. And there's interpretation, and it's how you feel about things. I remember earlier on, like, I'd always want to explain what I mean in writing, let's say, or even in talking. You can't explain exactly how things are going. That's like a song, right? And I'm bouncing all over the place. I've been a fire hose this week. I don't know why, but... Like in a song, we could hear the song and it can mean something different to you than it does to me. And I think that there's something really cool in there. That's art, right? There's creativity. There's all sorts of things, no different than a business, no different than an idea that you have to live, and you just use those words, and you're talking about the internal and external, but there's so many in-betweens that we have. And I can just hear when you talk, there's thinking going on. There is no prescription to exactly what to do. So if I were to sit with you and you were going to be my coach, you're not going to hand me I'm sure there's some lists and there's some ideas and there's some things that we're going to talk about, and you got to get this homework done and come back to me next week, whatever. There is no prescription for it. There's examples, there's history, there's experiences, and maybe you can come up with your own sets of ideas and lists for yourself, but there is no prescription. Do you see that too?
Yes, I would agree with that. What I would say is there are principles though, and those principles we can use to guide where it is that people are. So when you talk about, you know, you want to explain things, I liken that to communication. And what that comes on to, Kaz, is like, you explain something because you want to be understood, right? So think of who you want to be understood. You want to be understood by other people. So the secret is, and this is what a lot of people miss, is that in order to be understood, you have to understand first, because you have to kind of liken your communication to how it's going to be received. Because you can talk your face off, and that's what social media is, and Twitter and all this stuff. People are just shouting at each other to feel heard. But who's being heard on Twitter? Nobody's being heard. It's just arguing back and forth. So that's like one principle. You can talk about there's no prescription, but there's principle. And everybody is at a different place in their journey in life. And people have had different experiences and have figured different things out and have gone through different life lessons. But there's always the next one for people to learn from. That's what I like, what I do as a coach, is I get to help people to just give a new perspective with like, all right, like I honor where you've been and all that you've been through. This is what I'm seeing now. And this is what I'm hearing. Is that right? First of all, that's where I'm coming from, is try to understand them first. So that when I try to explain myself or some of my viewpoints, it's in a way that I know they can receive it effectively and it will resonate with them so that they can apply it to their own life.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of different directions I can go with that. I'm going to come back to multiple pieces of that. But you just talked about when you're coaching someone, you want to first understand them, because in coaching, yeah, because in sports, we can talk about like a basketball coach. Like we hear it all the time. It's like he coached this players, all of them the same. Well, no, it's never like that, right? Like we just go back to The Last Dance. And there was that one episode that was later on when Dennis Rodman just had to leave. He's like, I got to get out of here. And they're like, what are you talking about? You have to leave. Like we have games to play. And that's, again, I love extreme examples. Like we can apply it to so many different things, but they let him go. eventually Jordan had to go and pull him out of Vegas and said, we got to go. We got to get ready for the playoffs. But there's something interesting in that to say, we realize that we have to let him do this. And in other ways too, right? There's basic examples of how to, do I yell at this one? Do I account? Do I sit down with him? Do I console him? Do I get on the phone with his mom and him together? And we talk about some, there's so many different ways to coach. And that's what you're talking about. And that's essential because there's a lot of cookie cutterness out there when it comes to any business and specifically your business in coaching. And I can say this about the marketing world, the insurance industry, real estate, car sales, like there's always going to be good politics. There's going to be good and there's going to be bad. It's not all one way or the other. But in coaching, there is a bad rap that what have they succeeded at? What have they done? Well, they're just doing the same thing that they do for everybody else. So how is that going to help me? I'm this unique individual. So I appreciate you kind of talking about it the way you did, but I'm sure you hear that quite a bit in that the bad rap perhaps that the coaching industry gets.
Yeah. I want to make a connection with what I do with a basketball reference. So let me use mine first because we coach in teams quite often. So I kind of liken that to, it's the same word, right? Coach and coach. So how I'm most effective coaching teams is by tapping into what the players' true gifts are. So then we'll go to basketball, like Dennis Rodman, fantastic rebounder. Like if the coach's vision and his structure of the team was not to have have him on the outside and not rebounding basketballs, then A, he's not going to be happy. That's what he does best and what he likes to do. But B, the team's going to suffer too. It all kind of works together. And we do a lot of work with understanding intrinsic, extrinsic, and systemic. Coach gives the structure in a systemic way. But through the science and our understanding of what we call formal axiology, the intrinsic, what people bring to the table, is the most valuable because it's incalculable. You don't know when Kobe's going to go off for 60 points. You don't know when people are going to have 30 rebounds. It's incalculable what people are capable of. And you have to think about that when you're creating your structure, because it's a structured flexibility. You have to give enough structure so that people know their roles, but you have to give enough flexibility to where people can be themselves and shine.
I like that. It made me think of Nassim Taleb's book, The Black Swan. In a way, like you have to allow for the things that you can't possibly calculate, like the things, things are going to happen, right? And so I think that was well said. There's a lot going on, right? Because there's a lot of these things pulling two sides. You talked about Twitter. I agree with you. There's an extreme like polarization that goes on in these social media platforms, Twitter, Facebook, whatever. And like we could have a community group in our neighborhood and it can be very civil. And then all of a sudden someone brings up a topic and it goes extreme. And then you have to take extreme action to it. And you're like watching this fire spread out and it's scary. Twitter, though, on the other side is, if I talked about this, is you have to control your feed. So you have to control who you're going to let into your vision, who's going to enter your ears and all that different way, because there's a lot of positive in there as well. And if you can connect with the right people, that's very good. The problem is, it's an open platform in many ways to where even if you're seeing the positive, you can get caught up, you can go down this rabbit hole. So it's understanding what your cues are, what's going to trigger you to take that next step to say, well, I was getting some really good thoughts on philosophy, let's just say, and I was going, this is amazing. I'm talking about all different things. And then all of a sudden I got turned into politics, right? So what happened there? And so you have to know these triggers. And then I think what happens is understanding the habits. And we had first spoken, we had a video call as well. So we're on this Zoom, right? The Zoom hit, everyone's on. And you had the book, The Power of Habit, behind you. I love that book. And there's so much to apply here, but I think those are the cues that we're talking about, right? They had the basic examples. If you had to go to a bar, and if you go to a bar and say that there's a TV on, if there's a TV's on, the game's on, and what are you going to do? You're inevitably pick up an alcoholic beverage, and then you're going to smoke a cigarette. And you're going to, all of a sudden, you have to do that because you have your cues are in place and you're going to take off and go. It's no different than if you get on social media, if you're easily triggered in that, what do you do to prevent that from happening? Obviously, you're going to be talking about this a lot because you're trying to establish better habits for the people that you're working with. So I'm sure that book is a guiding light, guiding principle for yourself and for the people that you're working with. But talk to me a little bit about habits and how you see it and some of the stuff perhaps that I've just been talking about.
Yeah. So for me, habits are the vehicle to get you to where you want to go. So if you think about a lot of what you're talking about, guys, is awareness. And that's the first stage that we work on in coaching is like, are you even aware of what's going on? So what you're saying is, you know, with Twitter, like, what do you feel when you spend a lot of your time on Twitter? Is it anger? Is it joy? Is it happiness? Is it sadness? Like, just let's be super aware of when you spend 10 minutes or more on Twitter, is it a positive feeling? Most often it's not. You find yourself, like you say, going down a rabbit hole, like catching shit or whatever. It's hard to avoid that. So why continue to surround yourself with that? Like, what are you getting out of it? And if you're true to yourself, that's not what you want. there is that addictive quality to it with like go to the bar, smoke a cigarette, like all that stuff. It's just, it becomes part of what you do and how you identify yourself. Like if you're the Twitter guy or if you got to defend this platform, you hold yourself to that esteem, but it's this negative loop and negative cycle. And that's where that power of habit comes in of like, all right, well, like where in the chain can I break this? But it's always driven by the end feeling. If I'm feeling the anger, what do I want to feel? What's the opposite of anger? Do I want to feel joy? Do I want to feel happiness? Well, how do I get more of that? And then you find yourself less and less on Twitter.
Yeah.
Because that's not where you get that feeling from. So what gives you that feeling? How do you get more of that?
When did you study psychology?
When I was born.
Okay. Yeah.
Since I was born.
Okay. So you've always been fascinated by it?
Yeah, just, I think I have a high empathy. So I have the ability to try to put myself in other people's shoes. And it's just curious to me. I recognize I see the world through my eyes and hear it through my ears. But that's one perspective in a world of 7.5 billion people.
Yeah.
There's the balance of like my uniqueness as that person, but also my humility and respect for others. And I want to understand where other people are coming from too.
How are you with changing your own mind?
That's a great question. I've found that I have to be, as much as I want my clients to see things and have their minds changed, it's the equivalent of myself. So I'm ever growing in my pursuit of helping other people.
So you're, yes. I mean, there's a willingness there because that's a hard thing, I think. There's a humility in that and wanting to change your mind. Not wanting to like, I got to go seek to go, then I want to change my mind. But if something comes across,
just being open to it.
Absolutely. Being open to it. And I think we have an issue right now. This is generally speaking, of course, that there is an unwillingness to change your mind. Like the example that I talked about before with college football. This is the way it is. This is my fact. There's nothing that's going to change my mind. But you were going to say something.
Yeah. So I think it comes down to identity and how we identify. It's kind of what I was saying about viewing the world through my eyes. How effective am I, are you, are people, of like separating yourself from your emotions. We are not our emotions. We can think about our emotions. And when something inside of us gets stirred up, when our candidate, you know, our presidential candidate gets shouted down or gets made fun of, what is that? Why do we feel that way? And I think it's that examination that is the secret to understanding why we're so tied to or why we feel we need to defend it so staunchly, because it's just our perspective in that. So I think there's something in there with like, and that's the openness, right? You asked me that, like, I'm open until I'm uncomfortable about it. And then I have to kind of force myself to be open about it. That's where the growth comes from, is that leaning into that uncomfortability is the hardest thing to do. And that's why I think you need a coach to do that, because it's a process that we resist so much. And that's where like resistance causes stress. That's what that is.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a calmness to the way you communicate. And so obviously that's there to, can you use the word perspective? I mean, the name of the podcast is Entrepreneur Perspectives. And at the beginning is I wanted perspectives. I didn't see that there's a right or wrong way. I'm interested in perspectives. The perspective might be of a 9-year-old. The perspectives could be of someone who's a seasoned business veteran and she's been in business for 40 years and she's seen a lot. They're all perspectives. I don't necessarily know if it makes it right or wrong. It's we can learn from it, but there's a calmness to understanding it and taking it in and being willing to think about it. Have a conversation. Maybe that's an internal conversation. Maybe it's an external conversation to what you were saying before. And yeah, it's fascinating to watch that play out. And going back on, we talked about this before, bringing the right people with you, making sure that you choose these people. But how do you know for a fact that you have the right person? You can't. Like, and that gets in decision-making. And that's a complicated thing to go through to. There's big decisions. There's little decisions. There's decisions that you make that you didn't even know if they're big or little at the time. So if you want to surround yourself with the right people, how could you possibly know if you've done so? You know, and the people you've talked to, I'm sure you've seen it. And they thought they made a great decision. They chose a business partner and it was the wrong business partner, but they didn't find out till 15 years later that they were stealing from them. Now, again, extreme example. So bringing the right people with you, you clearly talk about this a lot and making sure that you're surrounding yourself. I mean, are you going with like 60% of what you know, just make the best decision and move forward?
Yes, I think that the secret in decision-making at its core is that we have that ability. So let's just honor that first and foremost. We have the ability to make decisions. And that might be unique to human beings compared to any other species that exists. Not that other animals can't make decisions, but we can contemplate and choose our action. So there, you want to talk about space. There's a space between the stimuli that we're receiving and the action that we're taking. What happens in that? We don't spend enough time in that space.
Yeah.
So when it comes to making decisions, I think it is our responsibility to make the best decision possible with the resources we have at hand. And sometimes that's not a lot of resources or it's not a lot of information. So you got to forge forward. And if it's wrong, own it. Like own up to that. And what do we need to do to make it better? What do you need to do to make it better? In relation to other people, like there's a fine line with being hard on yourself for making the wrong decision because inevitably you made the best decision you thought was right for you. But it's that recognition that if it was the wrong decision, don't stick around him. What needs to be done? How can you stay true to your inner being and how you feel about it? Because if you don't, then just more discomfort is coming your way.
Yeah. So that awareness of what you're thinking about and being able to talk to someone like yourself about those things.
That's huge.
Yeah. And a lot of times you're asking questions and you're talking to individuals or you're talking to groups, but you're also going to have to make a call perhaps on how, like on their psychology. Is it a combination of you talking to people and learning and asking questions and them talking? And also, is there anything not standardized or is there any sort of tests or software? Is there anything that you're using on top of it to give you more of a understanding of their psychology?
It's a good question. I think for me, it's just, I'm looking and listening for cues. So people are, they're telling you the answers to what they need just by the words that they're using. And we have this philosophy in the company and the other coaches with just taking the conversation where it needs to go. So I come in, I have no preconceived notion of how we can best spend our time in a coaching session. I can have some ideas of if you're open to being coached or want to learn something, what to do. But when I show up to my clients and they're like, they're feeling some type of way, they need to talk about that because that is what is most present in their life. And that's being present and aware of how they're feeling so that we can work to and through that emotion.
Okay.
To answer the question?
It does. Is there any system that you have? Is there anything on the back end of it as well that you're utilizing on top of it?
Yeah. So yeah, I appreciate you asking. So we do have this mind scan assessment. And this mind scan assessment, everybody has an assessment nowadays.
Yeah.
So I don't want to ruffle the feathers here. But I think this one is unique because it's based in what's called formal axiology. So this is a study, the mathematical measurement of our thinking. So the guy who created this, his name is Dr. Robert Hartman. Really interesting story, interesting guy. Grew up in Nazi Germany, was a judge, a prosecutor, was prosecuting Nazis until Hitler came to power. He got the hell out of Dodge, came to the States, studied thinking, got his PhD, earned a Nobel Peace Prize for his work in formal axiology. And what he discovered, Kaz, is much like there are three primary colors that all other color is derived from, there are three primary categories of thinking that every single one of our 15,000 to 65,000 daily thoughts can be categorized into. And then within those three dimensions, there's two different worlds. And I kind of touched upon that already. It's the internal and the external of what he called relator, doer, thinker. So every one of our thoughts has a primary, a secondary, a tertiary to do with either people, actions, or process. And our understanding of the way that our mind processes those three things and what we quote unquote bias or what comes to our bias or front of our mind, front of our thinking, is there because of our experiences in our lives. And we use that as an awareness tool of like, when people see this, it's mind blowing because it's like, how did you just figure that out from the assessment that I just took? And this assessment, would love to make it available to whoever listens to this, but you know, I administer it for free and go over the results with you for free. It's just structuring 18 statements from best to worst, which is incredible because I had one person complete and they called me and said, I'm done. I got it all right. It's like, no, that's not how this works. Somebody thinks so clearly on one topic and then see something else differently. And that's what makes it unique. And it's not a subset. Your results are not a subset of a greater population. It's unique to your own thinking views and how you see the world. And once you come to that realization, then we separate, quote unquote, the men from the boys, like the people who are like excited about like, oh, well, what does this mean? How can I use this?
Yeah.
And then that's where that humility comes in, that drive. Like, do you want to change it? If you don't, then I'm not working with you. Like, I'm not here to convince you of anything. But if you're driven to achieve another level of success, of happiness, of income, of wealth, let's talk. Let's have another conversation.
Yeah. And you've mentioned this before, like you talk about not here to convince someone. And we talk about that all the time. You know, if we're helping someone tell their story, whatever that story might be, it doesn't have to be a true story. It's if they're not a believer in that, we don't have to have that conversation. It's not going to work, especially with someone like yourself and a coach, if there's such a huge resistance. I would imagine though, there's times, right? You, again, go into the sports world you have the player that comes in and they're so resistant to it. And something had to happen. Something had to trigger them again to, wow, it opened up. My son had that. He was playing soccer and he's a goalkeeper, but they were getting frustrated with the coach. He's from a different country. They couldn't understand him. He's getting mad at him. He's telling them these things. They go through the practices. They play the first game and they're like, oh, wow, this worked. You know, it's like the Karate Kid in a way. Yeah. They had a whole new level of respect for him. So the resistance went way down and their openness to what he was talking about went way up. And you could just see it. You could see it take place on the field. And so you obviously see that. You want to share and do these assessments with people. That doesn't mean that it has to go anywhere.
Yeah.
You're not selling people on, you have to work with me on these things. You're more or less sharing what you do, talking about it, answering questions, which I would imagine leads into you getting on YouTube and doing something like we're doing and having a show, talking, asking business leaders, founders, entrepreneurs about their journeys, about the questions and specific things like sales and resilience and you name it, that you want to have these conversations with these people. There isn't some pitch to say, you need to do this with us, right? Obviously, they know that they can do that. Is that a main reason why you create content for all the stuff that I've just kind of unloaded on here?
Yeah, so I appreciate you saying that. I host a podcast with another coach of mine. His name's Coach Nick Davies, and it's called Truth Seekers. And we developed a mission statement for it because we wanted to stick true to it. And it was to expand consciousness through collaborative content creation. So what that implies, Kaz, is like, when we come together, and this is happening right now, we're having a conversation with both of our perspectives, and we're bringing it together to reach a new level of understanding, of information, so that the viewers of this can think it's valuable. Think of it. This is not a humor. Like, we've laughed a couple of times. I could tell a couple of jokes, but it's not for people to come and laugh at. It's for them to bring something of value away from it so that they can apply it in their own lives. And that's what Truth Seekers is to me, is like, people who want to engage and have these meaningful conversations, I want to know what resilience means to you. I want to know what success means to you, because it means a little bit different to me. And I want to share my perspective. And then by the end of it, we've come to an agreement and a higher level of understanding of what success means in the greater grandeur of everything. And I think that's rewarding. I think people subscribe to that, and that's what they get excited about.
For sure. When I have this conversation with you, if no one listens to it, we still had this conversation. I get to learn from it. And then I think of it, okay, well, John on our team, he's going to be working on it behind the scenes. He's going to have to listen to it. He's got to write something about it. He's going to have to take away something from it.
I hope you enjoy it, John.
Yes, right. That's perfect. There's a level of training. And, you know, someone asked me, well, what's your training process? Oh, we have great training. Well, you have like a training manual. No. Like, it's our content. It's our story. And then it's the mentorship and it's the interactive. And it's like the stuff that you can't write it down on a piece of paper all the time. Although we do that as well. We maybe put it in a blog. The content's there. And then we can have a conversation, right? It's that in between that we can have those conversations on. So I also feel like there's so many benefits to creating content. And those are just two of them that we just talked about, because we got to have a conversation. There's a leverage component of it. Perhaps you and I aren't talking. Maybe we are, but perhaps you and I aren't talking if I don't have a podcast and vice versa. And so if it's done in a genuine way, I think that's unique leverage. And I think that's media, and that should be taken advantage of, again, in a genuine way. There's so many aspects. So much of content is about growing your business. Do this and your business will grow 10x and whatever people say. Again, that's not a bad thing. And if you can get new people to become aware of your business and what you do, by all means, like, I think it's awesome. We've been reached out to by multiple people. How did you hear about us? We found you on Google. We loved what you said. And then we talked to you, and that's awesome. But those are other benefits. I think the core benefit is what you were talking about. And do you see that as well when you're having these conversations? You're like, this is pretty awesome that I get to have this conversation. It allows me as a coach to even get better as to what I do.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I like what you said about this is the leverage point. But then, like, if we take it a step further, what I see is, like, we're unattaching ourselves from an end result. We're not doing this to achieve anything, to get anything out of it. And when we allow ourselves to play and have fun, that's where the magic happens. Like, we're engaged. We're present in this conversation. I'm not typing an email on the side. I'm not, like, trying to accomplish anything. And I think so much of the business world is, like, end results driven. We live month to month, quarter to quarter. What's your sales numbers? What's this? What's that? And that goes against the laws of abundance, like the natural laws of the universe. And when we understand how those work, it's funny because it's more effortless. It's more free And you think the opposite has to be true. You got to work harder. You got to work longer hours. It's just being present and doing the things that come natural to you and are fun, because out of that comes great things. And you can't predict what they are. And we won't even know what they are with this podcast. But like, I'm enjoying myself talking to you, because this is one of my hobbies, is being contemplative about conversations. And we're talking about psychology and mind scan and formal axiology. I love this stuff. This is amazing. So yes, to your point, if nothing else, if I don't hear anything, if I don't get any likes, if I don't have anybody wanting to take the mind scan, this is a victory, because I'm having an engaging conversation with somebody from Buffalo.
Yes, sir.
Bill, that I'm enjoying. I'm being present and enjoying it with no, and I'm unattached from any desired result that I want to get out of it.
I think it's important what you said. You're like, this is a hobby. Like, you enjoy this stuff. And I had to get there to realize, wait a second, what if my hobby is what I do? What if it's the creativity? What's the thinking? What if it's the reading? And once you enjoy it, well, then it's just easy. And then to have these types of conversations to say, did I work today? Because yeah, you really did. And you also made the other point of to have that conversation where that's it. It's just the two people or whoever, how many people are in the room talking, everything else is put away. It's rare to find that today, to have that avenue or to have that connection to where there's not something disconnecting us. I mean, there's always something, right? I have a computer screen, you have a computer screen in front of you. I try to turn off all, I don't typically have alerts anyway, but somehow it's like something, some setting change and alert's going to come in. And you're like, I was trying to avoid it, but you know what I'm saying? Like, it is a rare experience to then just really dive into this type of conversation. So I completely agree with you. Why YouTube?
That was the most accessible point. We're just this week rolling out subscription. We'll be on Apple Podcasts and Spotify moving forward. So
okay.
I like YouTube because that's the visual too.
Sure.
So much of our communication is, I think it's like 7% of communication is just the words.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, tonality and then physiology. And like, you get the whole kit and caboodle when you get to watch a video, see somebody's body language and hear their tonalities go up and down and watch their excitement. I think even as we go into Apple Podcasts and Spotify and all these other platforms, we're still going to post on YouTube.
Sure.
We drive people there.
Yeah. No, I think it makes a lot of sense. I mean, just even having a conversation where I can see the other person. I've done it over phone when I had to, or earlier on when we were doing it. And there's aspects of that I like that too, but being able to interrupt, like, oh, we want to add something, or you just kind of, there's some signals going on there. It's just easier to communicate. And then also obviously for people to watch it. And I think you make a good point. Like, and that's what we talk about, is do the easy thing. Like, you don't have to do it all. People are like, well, you got to get on Facebook. I got to be on Twitter and I got to have a podcast on all these different platforms. And then I need a YouTube channel, Pinterest. And like, hold on, just do the, and I'm sure you would say this, do the easy thing first. And you know, it's wild. We have some stuff on YouTube, but not a lot. We haven't pushed that. That's one area we haven't. But all of these episodes that we're recording right now, it's all video. And I always say, create the library. It's because what I can do is when there's time and we want to do that next project, we can go put all of this content on YouTube and do it in a unique way of when I have time and want to do it. It's like you said, there's no right or wrong answer. It's a perspective. You go with it and just get it done. And obviously I would imagine you would say the same thing. So I think it's important that you are out there creating content, because here's the thing. If I want to hire someone as a coach, I want to understand who they are, how they talk, what are their beliefs, what do they look like? I think I can have this conversation? And I don't know, like, you just feel it. Same thing with a therapist. Like, it'd be nice to hear their voice. What do they sound like? You're going to be spending so much time with that person that a long form piece of content, and pick whatever long form means to you, I think can do so much for us. Like, I'd rather forget the sound bite, which I get it. Sound bites are nice. I want the long conversation. So going into the politics world that we live in right now, like, wouldn't it just be better to hear that person talk for an hour in a conversation as opposed to hearing what they had to say for 30 seconds or 2 minutes?
Yeah, it's such a great point. And it goes back to the connectivity with people. If you're exploring coaching, or if you really want to get to know somebody, you got to spend time with them and know how their mind works, what their outlook is. And if it resonates with you, then that's truth right there. Like, you can feel it and you know it. I had this example pop up when you were speaking. Like, think of high school sports, college sports. Think if you had a roster of coaches that you can hear their style, or they have to almost sell to you like what they're going to bring to you as an athlete. And if like you see value in that, like, oh, I know he's going to push me, or oh, he's going to give me a different perspective and hone this skill that's a little bit weak. I'm right-footed. Maybe he'll teach me how to kick left-footed and make me a more well-rounded athlete. So yeah, to that point, it's about the all-encompassing consumption of who a person is and what they're bringing to the table that allows you the most information to make the decision that is best for you.
Yeah. And I think that's a great example you use with coaching, because there's only so many Bobby Knights and they're only so accessible that you can understand like, no, my son needs to be that military style and he needs to go and play at that school and whatever, or someone else. But that's the recruiting piece of it, because we see that as well, that people have found us based on our content. I bet you people have, I don't know what the word would be, unfound us. Maybe they hear it and like, they don't agree with it. I don't want to be a part of that. That's okay too, right? So it works in all different directions. So that soccer coach at a university, if he doesn't want the player that's not willing to handle the, you know, I'm tough on my kids and this is how it's going to be. And if you show up 1 minute late to practice, I promise you, you're sitting. If they don't want that, he doesn't want him in the program. And so to that point, like, yeah, 100%, I totally agree with that. So what type of business leaders, entrepreneurs do you like to work with, or do you work with?
Well, that's a great question too. So I work with all different types of people in all different industries, because these principles of success apply to anyone and everyone. And you could just want to increase your sales. You could want more happiness. You know, it could be emotional stuff. You could want peace. You could want like whatever it is, whatever that you desire and you know will take you to the next level of where you need to be. That's the type of person I want to work with. Somebody who's hungry and humble. I'm pretty sure that's a Tom Brady quote. So, you know, I don't want to get stoned on this podcast here, but I kind of like that. If I could, I'll leave the rest. I'll take one thing from Tom Brady.
Yeah.
And it's that hungry and humble, like hungry enough to take action, to show up and to play all out. And then humble enough to realize that like maybe the reason I'm where I'm at is because of the perspective I have. And I'm open to a new perspective and trying new things. And that's the only two things I ask of people. And what I found is like it applies to everybody. And the higher you go, the more exponential the results. So if you think of like, you know, think of an athlete pursuing, like they have choices of where they want to go to college to participate in sports, right? So it almost is like they're interviewing the coaches. Like you don't get that level if you're at the D3 level. You're just kind of like hoping a team picks you up or whatever. But if you're being scouted, you have a choice in that. And like that gives you the ability to more tap into that ability, not ability, more tap into the possibility of somebody taking you to the next level. That's why like success compounds. It's exponential interest on top of it. And that's why like the higher we go, the more fun it gets.
Yeah. No, I think that makes a lot of sense. If it's in the niche, right? It might say not be industry specific. It might not be background specific. Hungry and humble. Are you these things? Can I tell if you're these things? And no, I think it's okay. It's weird because we shouldn't be talking about the Patriots or Brady. You know, he's not even on them anymore. But like you said, there's that story of, you know, he's in practice and he's throwing the ball and his coach is like, that's a good pass. He's like, I know when I make a good pass. I don't need you to tell me that. I need you to tell me when I make a bad pass and what I did wrong. And that's kind of to your point of he was humble enough to, obviously he's doing something right. Like love him or hate him. I mean, he did something. So you have to pay attention to it, right?
Yeah. Right. You can at least respect him. And I know I'll probably still take shit for that, but I respect him. He shows up, man. He takes care of his body. He knows what's right for himself. And he's a leader. He leads his team and people respect him. So. Mm-hmm.
I think there's more hate when it was like early on when you're just constantly losing over and over. But then when you just came to expect it, like whatever, you just, you know, well, it is what it is.
Then the referees, I mean, just, I don't know.
Yeah.
There's just something there.
It is. Yeah. You can't hit Tom. You can hit anybody else, but don't hit Tom. Yeah. It's a 15 yard penalty. What? You're like, no, that's not right. So
here we go being Bills fans
that's
again.
It, yeah. Josh, where do people learn more about you? How do they connect with you? And yeah.
Yeah, sure. So you can find me on LinkedIn, just Joshua Greco, Pro Advisor Coach of the company. My email is joshua@proadvisorcoach.com. Advisor is OR. Some people get confused with that. I love meeting people and connecting with people and hearing other people's stories unattached from the result. I don't necessarily, you don't have to be a potential client or whatever. I'm looking to bring value to people in any way possible. And sometimes that's over a couple of Zooms and people go on their way. And other times people get excited about coaching and let's have that conversation. But yeah, those are the main platforms and how I can be reached.
Well, Josh, I appreciate it. And you bring a lot of intellect here. Yeah, history of Western New York. And I don't know what's going to happen with the Bills and the Sabres, but we'll see. And calmness, though, and obviously the psychological background and just a lot of good thoughts, man. It's important. I really enjoy these conversations. I appreciate our connection. Obviously, we're going to stay in touch.
Me as well. And part of good conversations is good questions. So I had to think about some things today. And that's how you know the magic's happening.
There you go. That's cool, man. Well, thank you, Josh.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Kaz.
One of my favorite things about CazSource is the opportunity to chat with amazing business leaders and entrepreneurs. We hope you enjoyed the conversation.
If you want to connect, you can find me on LinkedIn or visit us at CazSource.com. Thank you for listening to this CazSource production, Entrepreneur Perspectives, building and protecting your business one podcast at a time. This episode exists because of CazSource. CazSource is your content team. You know how many business leaders need help communicating their story? That's what we do. Content strategy, creation, and distribution for business leaders. This provides opportunities, relationships, and a platform for you and your business. Why do we do this? Because at CazSource, we exist to help you create and share amazing content. And yes, you should have a podcast. We'll help you. Learn more by visiting kazcontent.com.